Hi, I'm Johnny Carson.
It's Kristen Chenoweth here.
Hi, I'm Bart from The Simpsons on Fox. Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year.
This is Anne Murray.
This is Phil Jensen. You're listening to The Sounds of Christmas podcast.
Hi, I'm Ken Kessler, and welcome to The Sounds of Christmas podcast. If you're new to this podcast, I'm going to start by saying thanks for joining us. If you're not new, welcome back. Either way, I'm glad you're here. Now, to avoid any confusion, I want to start off by saying there won't be any music played here. This is a place for conversation. I'll talk about Christmas music and some related topics, sometimes by myself and sometimes with guests. If you're looking for music, just go to soundsofchristmas.com and click on the tree or the player on the front page or on the Listen Now page. We play the best variety of Christmas music all year long. Well, except in October, when we play the best variety of Halloween music. I'm just a couple episodes away from the 200th episode of the Sounds of Christmas podcast, and I wanted to take a moment, actually a bit more than a moment, to thank you for listening and continuing to listen. It's been a fun ride since that first episode. In this podcast, I just wanted to mention a bit about the Sounds of Christmas, how we got here and what we do, and set the stage for what I hope will be a fun series of interviews with people who love Christmas music. That's really how all this started for me, the love of Christmas music. When I was a kid and record stores were still a thing, I spent hours combing the stacks looking for Christmas music. I got so much joy when I came across something new and potentially exciting, or when I found something rare, which was even more exciting, like the children's record In Harmony 2, the second and final charity album created to support the Children's Television Workshop. Both of those albums featured popular singers and bands performing children's songs, or at least songs for children, like the Doobie Brothers and their version of Wink and Blink and a Nod, and Lou Rawls and Denise Williams duetting on The Owl and the Pussycat, and Bruce Springsteen and the E Street Band performing Santa Claus is Coming to Town from a concert in Brookville, New York in 1975. And that was how this podcast began. Since then, I've talked about lots of different things related to Christmas music, including episodes devoted to specific artists that have given us a lot of Christmas music, like Nat King Cole, Bing Crosby, Frank Sinatra, Elvis Presley, Mannheim Steamroller, Mariah Carey, Harry Connick Jr., and, believe it or not, Taylor Swift. I also paid tribute to artists no longer with us, who may or may not be known for the Christmas music that they've left behind, including Eddie Money, Solomon Burke, B.J. Thomas, Ronnie Spector, Cynthia Whale, Olivia Newton-John, Jeff Beck, Tony Bennett, and Whitney Houston. I talked about Christmas music at the Grammys, the Emmys, and the Oscars, as well as the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame and the National Recording Registry. And I shared the space with lots of guests, writers, charities, other podcasters, people in the radio industry, and lots of artists. One of my first guests was Ricky Meese from the Sleigh Bells and Mistletoe podcast, where we talked about how she and her co-host, Mary Richards, started their podcast.
You know, I had it in my mind for several years before it actually launched. I knew I wanted to do a podcast. I knew it was to be Christmas related. Even though that's kind of an independent niche audience, it was still something that I really wanted to pursue, but I had to wait for the right partner to find that person to join me to really get it up and off the ground. So when we created the Sleigh Bells and Mistletoe Christmas podcast, the beginnings of it were already in the works about a year and a half to 2 years before that. I had an outline of shows, potential guests. Just like you would make a business plan to start and open a new business, that's what I did to plan and create a Christmas podcast.
And I should mention, for anybody who doesn't know the Sleigh Bells and Mistletoe podcast, that when she says we, Ricky does this podcast with Mary Richards, who does the Christmas news related part of the podcast. That's right,
yes.
Right?
Yeah. Yes, it is.
Is there any particular significance for the title that you chose, Sleigh Bells and Mistletoe?
Yeah, we in mentioning Mary Richards, she is this delightful little, I call her our version of Cindy Lou Who. She even kind of looks like her. But I can just imagine her as a little girl being that way. And Mary and I actually work together at the same radio station. So we are broadcasters by day, podcasters by night. But we're in a very stress-filled environment at the station we work at because it's a news talk station. Right. And anyone who's been listening to the news over the last few years, you know that's been a little bit of a roller coaster. And it turned out that by chance, we kind of stumbled across each other. And when I found out that she loved Christmas as much as I do, and I'm like, what are we waiting for? Let's dive in. And coming up with the name was the hardest part. Because each time I try Googling or going online to one of the social media sites and typing in something, there was already an identity of some sort of that out there, whether it was a podcast or not. But then I started thinking about Mary and I individually. Mary is definitely the Hallmark and movie and TV person of the pair. And I am much more the music person of the two of us. Then I started thinking, well, she's kind of like mistletoe with that whole romance of the holidays. And I'm much more of, if I had to figure out one sound effects to get someone's attention that would immediately remind them of Christmas, it would be a jingle bell, a sleigh bell. And that's how we came up. So I'm kind of the sleigh bell. She's kind of the mistletoe. We had to throw in Christmas in there somewhere just to make sure people weren't confused. And that's the name. It's long. I know that. But we abbreviated on mine, but it's who we are.
Jerry D. from the Totally Rad Christmas podcast has joined me several times, but his first visit was all about 80s Christmas music and other topics that he includes on his podcast.
I love all things 80s. I was an 80s kid, so the music is my favorite. The toys and shows and everything was my favorite.
What exactly is the Totally Rad Christmas podcast for anybody who hasn't caught it yet?
So if you haven't, I like to say it's a podcast about the raddest time of year and the baddest decade ever. So basically, it's anything that was popular at Christmas in the 80s, sometimes even just tangentially. So, for example, I did an episode on video games that I got as a present in the 80s. But most of the time we focus on things that are, much more solidly Christmas. So Scrooged, A Christmas Story, National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation for movies, or Garfield's Christmas and Claymation Christmas Celebration for shows. And yes, we do episodes on music like Prince and the Bangles. And I'm going to have a very special Christmas mega episode with a bunch of musicians on. So that'll be fun. And just anything that has to do with Christmas in the 80s, even books and fashion and fads and stuff like that. So, yeah, it's something I started because I love, like I said earlier, I love the 80s and I also love Christmas. So
that was going to be a combination of my next two questions. Why the 80s and why Christmas?
But it's... Well, because. Yeah. I mean, I was a kid, throughout the 80s. So, and I think when you're kids, Christmas is just so much more magical and you get that feeling of, just the awe and the wonder and the joy when you rush to the tree and you see all the presents underneath it that Santa's left you. And so, I tried to recreate that as much as I can with my children. And so thinking about, as I was preparing for that, each Christmas with my children and trying to get them in the spirit, it reminded me of my own childhood. And so I decided to kind of, maybe if I can make someone remember that feeling a little bit, then, it'll be worth it. And so I decided to start a podcast with that.
And a great example of that is a recent episode that you did on an episode of the Amazing Stories show from the 80s about Santa 85, which for a while I thought maybe I'm the only one who even remembers that. But it was really neat to hear you guys talking about it.
Well, had I known that you remembered it, I would have had you on the show too. that was one that when I was doing my research, and I only vaguely remembered I had like a couple of images in my head, and that was really about it. The plot I didn't remember at all, but I was doing research for a few other possible topics, and that one popped up, and I thought, oh, that'll be fun to cover someday. And so I kind of just sent it out on in the ether, like, hey, anyone want to join me? And so Scott and Anthony decided to come on. But yeah, it was an episode of Amazing Stories, and it's fun. It's actually pretty charming episode.
For Christmas in July, I talked to Jeff from MyMerryChristmas.com about the website and the significance of Christmas in July.
Well, I would hope everybody knows this by now. We've only been at this for about 30 years, making us probably one of the oldest Christmas venues online still surviving. And it's a continually evolving kind of thing. It's a rather active and broad-based Christmas community that's available to anybody for free year round.
As somebody who loves Christmas all year round, it's great to be able to connect with other people all over the, I was going to say all over the country, but really all over the globe, who also love Christmas all year round. And they are very active. I don't know how many forums are there, but there are tons of activity every single day, new things being posted by people, sharing recipes and favorite songs and traditions. And just, it's so much fun. And it really starts to ramp up this time of year, which, you know, may sound funny to some because we're just coming to the end of June. But for Christmas in July, I was just taking a peek at the calendar on MyMerryChristmas.com, and there is tons of stuff coming up.
Well, there's a lot of stuff we don't even have on the calendar yet. We've always looked at Christmas in July as a way of bringing the community together, and we try to showcase stuff that's new or different. And it's been pretty active the last couple of years, because the last couple of years have been really different. I mean, last July was just crazy. Everybody was home and kind of isolated, and it was kind of a popular place to be last July. And we learned a lot because we were able to bring in people we normally couldn't get in before for Christmas in July. And we hope to continue that this year so that we could just showcase what's new and different out there.
Just to give you a little taste of what's coming in Christmas in July, there's a bunch of contests. They're doing different chats with Christmas experts, creators of all things Christmas, different forum gatherings, some watch parties around events on Hallmark and QVC, and exchanges. That's one thing that I want to talk about that I think is really neat: Christmas card exchanges and ornament exchanges. It's so cool that people all over can connect and find a Christmas family on MyMerryChristmas.com, and you can exchange cards and ornaments. Has this been something that's been going on for the entirety of the website?
No, it's something that we founded about 16 years ago, really when we added forums to our site. And that sounds like a long time now, but boy, it feels like just yesterday that we started. But the Christmas card exchange has become a cherished tradition. We've got a number of folks who've been in it from the very beginning. And it's even created traditions within itself with, you know, certain kinds of cards that are being sent and personalities that send them. And it's really a touching thing, I think, to freak out your mailman to see him bring cards from all over the world. I've actually had a mailman say, "Who are you?" Because, you know, you get these piles of cards from people and they're from, you know, the Netherlands or Australia, New Zealand or Japan, wherever, you know, folks who've joined the community and are there year round. And, you know, those who are interested join up with the exchange and we send cards every year. And it's really one of the big events of the entire year. And we start it with Christmas in July. Give time for that list to build.
Speaking of Christmas in July, one year I did what I called Christmas Podcastapalooza, where I invited a bunch of Christmas podcast hosts on to talk about their podcast. That included Sean from the Christmas Podcasts podcast, Art from A Cozy Christmas podcast, Matt from North Pole Radio, Glenn from the Seasons Eatings podcast, Joseph from the Christmas Creeps podcast, Mike from Advent Calendar House, Colin from the Christmas Movies Actually podcast, and Robert from the Behind the Bells podcast. Here's a little sample.
I'm Sean Sotka. I'm the host of the Christmas Podcast podcast. Basically, I hype all you guys up is what I really do. We have a bunch of Christmas podcasts on our website, christmaspodcast.com. And when you guys drop episodes, I put them out on our website, direct them back to you, just to try to get more, you guys, more reach out there for Christmas lovers and expose everybody to the Christmas. And so that's, I just love Christmas podcasts. So we just started it up, and yeah, I'm basically your guys' hype guys. You guys come out with episodes. I put them out, tweet them out, put them on Instagram and Facebook and say, hey guys, listen to these episodes. And every one of you guys, everybody's had an episode I absolutely love. So, and a lot of them pretty recently too. And that's what I do, is hype you guys up just like I did.
Sean, how long have you been doing this?
I've been doing this for a couple of years. Basically, once COVID, the lockdowns from COVID hit, I started up. I was talking with Jeff Westover of My Merry Christmas, and we were chatting and stuff. And he's like, well, how many podcasts do you listen to? And at that time, I had about, a good 6, 7, 8 of them that I listened to. And I think Jerry was one of them at the time because he was one of the first ones on. And Tis the Podcast was another one. And Tim Babb's Can't Wait for Christmas. So those were like one of the first ones we had on our website that Jeff and I talked about. So he says, well, why don't we, and I've been telling Jeff that I've been wanting to do a podcast. It's just, with all the researching and stuff and me being busy, I didn't know where to begin. And this was just an easy way because my research is easy. You guys drop the episodes. I just take your information and relay it back out there. So, and I love Christmas podcasts. It's just something, it's a way to get Christmas that's different. You get other people's aspects and insights and their opinions on them. And I'm of the one that I like hearing different opinions about things that I love, even if they don't like them like I do. But I respect that they have the opinion, and to hear why, it gives me a broader liking of the Christmas stuff.
Well, I like to read and celebrate the stories of Christmas, especially the old ones in the public domain, because then I won't get sued from stealing.
That's important.
From creators. But no, I love and have always loved to read, and I've been a tremendous fan of Charles Dickens and the Christmas Carol and all that, and so I've just been a big Christmas fan my whole life. So what I try to do there is to celebrate, you know, his stories, but so many others as well. And I'll have guests on sometimes, and we'll talk about their stories of Christmas, whether they're actually a published author or just somebody who is a creative Christmas person. So I can include some of the podcasters and people like that will come on. And just really, I just follow wherever my interest takes me, that particular week or month. And this podcast came out of the pandemic. So at the time I was looking for something to help me relax and not be so stressed out by world events. And that's what I'm really hoping that this podcast does for people, is just to give them a time to settle down and unplug and hear some great stories about Christmas.
And you said it came out of the pandemic. So you've been at it for about 2 years, more or less?
Yeah, 2 years. This July will be my 2 year anniversary. Can't
Happy
remember
anniversary
exactly.
To you
it
too.
Was about mid July. Oh, thank you. I was going to wait until September of 2020, but I was just getting too excited. So I just I don't even care. I have one episode. I'm just going to put it out and start going. So it was right about Christmas and July time, and I thought that would be a good month to kick it off. So, but yeah, podcasting was something I'd always been interested in, and had wanted to start one a couple years even before I did, but just either didn't have the time and I didn't have the knowledge, definitely. But just finding Christmas podcasts on, you know, like this is amazing. This is like podcast just for me. This is great. So then getting to know some of you guys and then deciding I'm going to just take the plunge and try it out. So guys like Todd Killian were very helpful to me and helping me find the resources to get started. And it's been such a supportive community And I've really appreciated it.
Well, I'm a certified baker. I've been doing that since 2011. And when I was in school, we learned to make all these sort of holiday foods because school ran from September through till May or April. And the first half of the year, we learned how to make all the Christmas stuff that people buy, like the fruitcake and the Stollen and the panettone and all that stuff, because we had to learn how to bake commercial goods. And all that stuff got made by the students and got shipped to the commissary for people to buy, the students and the teachers upstairs. So while I was making this, of course, we learn, you know, how it was made with the ingredients and a little bit of science behind it. And I was always fascinated that, you know, we make this product once, maybe twice a year, even though nowadays you can get ingredients any time of the year. So why is it that we only make it one more at one time of year? So I got to thinking, I've been listening to podcasts for a few years, and I was listening to, first to Brian Earle's Christmas Pasch podcast, and he touched on a few food-related topics, like candy canes and all that stuff. And I couldn't find any other podcasts out there that talked about the topic of food to go into a really deep dive about the history and the origins of the foods that we love during the holidays. So I said, why not? And, you know, the lovely pandemic that we all had 2.5 years ago gave me a little bit extra free time. And I talked with Todd Killian from Christmas Clatter, and he gave me the logistics side and all that stuff about hosting and recording and starting a podcast. And he was very super helpful. And I just jumped in both feet.
One of the things that I really love about Seasons Eatings is that there have been several times where you have brought up something and I never heard of that particular food item. And I would see the post on Twitter and I think, okay, that's something that I'm not interested in making. I wouldn't even try it if somebody gave it to me. But the way you present it is so interesting, and the story behind it makes me want to know more about it, even if there's no way I'd ever take a bite of that. Do you ever bring up stuff? And this is probably a dumb question, that being in the industry that you're in, you probably get this a lot, but do you ever focus a podcast on something that you feel that way about, that you have no interest in eating, but it's an interesting story?
Oh, absolutely. There are many foodstuffs out there, not Christmas related, but sometimes winter holiday related, that I will never try. I'm pretty open about trying new foods, and I'll maybe even take one bite just to say I've done it. But some of the stuff, like there's a fermented shark that a lot of Icelandic people like to eat during the holidays. I'm sorry, I can't. and a lot of stuff that I researched, for example, making gelatin out of pig's feet. I mean, personally, I wouldn't want to do it because it stinks when it's broken down, and I'll just, you know, leave that to the commercial factories to make lovely little sachets of powdered gelatin that I can use. So yeah, there are plenty of things that I will not try, but I'll definitely research, because even though I won't try it, I will definitely have a fascination of why and how it's made. It seems to be a thing for me. When I was a kid, I'd always sort of pick things apart. And I'd take a radio apart, unfortunately wouldn't know how to put it back together, but just to see the individual parts and how they're made. And the same thing with cooking. It's always fascinating to me how you take individual ingredients, you put them together in a certain combination, and they make something completely different. So I thought that fascination would, if I like to think about it, there's got to be a few other people out there who like to think about it as well.
Oh, sure. That's kind of how I feel about the Sounds of Christmas music station, that I don't play everything, but I play a lot of stuff, and it's a lot of stuff that I like. And the hope is that there are other people out there who like it as well. Joseph, how long have you been doing the Christmas Creeps podcast?
We are in our eighth quote unquote season right now, I suppose. But we do our show all year round, so it's hard to think of it that way. We've been doing it since the January of 2015. And so we've definitely been at this for a long time.
Yeah. What led you to start Christmas Creeps?
A couple of things. So I've been writing about movies semi-professionally since 2009. And then right around the Christmas of 2014, you know, a family member passed away, my grandmother, and Christmas was her absolute favorite thing in the whole world. Like the whole family's year revolved around, you know, my grandmother's, you know, Christmas, you know, celebration. So after that happened, the next year I had Christmas on the brain, and I just said to a couple of friends, you know, wouldn't it be fun if we watched Christmas movies all year round? And my friends are the kind of friends who take things like that as a challenge. So they said, well, why don't we do that? And not realizing that I'm like a true believer as far as Christmas movies go, like I will watch just about anything. And they're just kind of along for the ride. So it's become a little bit of like a Mystery Science Theater sort of experiment where I will try to find a weirder or stranger or just off the beaten path Christmas movie to try and torture my friends with. But I do it out of a place of love because I genuinely do enjoy the holidays, and I try to, this is my way of stretching it out across the calendar year, every year, as long as I can. And at this point, we're just too stubborn to stop.
I got invited on a friend's podcast a couple of years before, and it was called Nerd Lunch, and it was just a sort of all-purpose pop culture show. And that kind of, I got the podcasting bug from that. I'm like, I need to do this myself. I need to figure out a topic. And what I had been doing on Facebook or Twitter every December was having my own little advent calendar of just posting videos of old Christmas specials and episodes. And at some point I decided, okay, maybe I can turn that into a podcast. And the first year, 2017, I sort of tested the waters a bit, did 8 episodes. Then the year after that, I did like a full 24 from December 1st to Christmas Eve. That found that to be a little bit of overkill. So the next year I split it up. I would do 12 in July, 12 in December in an advent calendar sort of format every other day. And that's kind of fit my schedule nicely. So I don't have to worry about pumping out something every week or so. I can take the time to edit and kind of make everything sound nice and do a little more research and get a little bit of notes more prepared for that.
So that's what we're here today. What is Advent Calendar House about? What are the episodes about?
It is every episode is about a TV Christmas special or holiday special or episode from a series that was set around the holiday. I call the tagline for my show is a salute to all holiday specials, but mostly the Christmas ones. So every once in a while, especially in July, that's when I'll throw in things like Halloween and Thanksgiving and Valentine's Day and things like that.
Colin, how long have you and Carrie been doing the Christmas Movies Actually podcast?
We started in December of 2018, and we started with 3 movies, Christmas Story, which was celebrating its 35th anniversary that year. So we kicked off with that, and because it's a classic, you know, everybody knows it, and that seemed like a safe thing to do. And then Christmas Chronicles, which was new on Netflix at the time. That's the one with Kurt Russell as Santa Claus. And then just to show that we really love all genres, we did a horror movie called Christmas Evil that came out in 1980, which is phenomenal. That is a great movie. And so that was sort of our inaugural launch at that time. And it was, I mean, we just knew like we wanted to keep doing it. We decided to do one episode a month, you know, all year round, instead of just waiting till Christmas time to do episodes.
What led the two of you to start and do this podcast?
I've been a film critic here in Chicago for a little over 20 years, and I've guested on so many podcasts that I just thought, and also doing guesting on a radio show every week to review the new movies. Just eventually, I just really wanted to just host my own because I found I was getting a little like a little bit of a control freak whenever I'd guest on the podcast. Yep. I'd be like, oh no, let's not talk about this here. Let's talk about it here because it'll be better because it'll segue into the, and I'd just be like, you know, why don't I just host a podcast? I know I'm driving my friends nuts. So, but I didn't want to do it by myself. And my girlfriend, Carrie, who's now my fiance, we'd been together for about a year and a half. And I kind of knew like, That would be good. A co-host who's not a professional film critic would be good because, you know, I knew she'd bring a lot to it that, you know, to make it a little less. I mean, you know, I don't know. She keeps me in check, which is great.
I've been hosting Behind the Bells and producing it as well since the November of 2020 when I debuted my first two part episodes of Disney's The Santa Claus, going to that whole deep dive.
What led you or drove you to start doing this podcast?
I happen to not just love movies, but I love the stories that go behind the making of those movies, really finding out about the people who go far as back as just coming up with the initial idea. As myself, I've worked in the industry for a good 15 years myself, doing a variety of different jobs from acting, writing, and even just miscellaneous background work. And of course, I also went to school at UC Irvine, where I studied film studies. And thus, I've always been one of those kinds of guys that had loved to analyze and just really deep dive into any movie's themes, symbols, just to really get, you know, all the underlying context of what was going on within that story. Now, how exactly I got around to doing Christmas movies is fascinating because when it came to doing a podcast, I had always wanted to do some kind of film podcast, but let's face it, there's hundreds, thousands, maybe even millions of different kind of movie podcasts. So that's when I decided to start narrowing it down to specific niches that I liked. And I guess I could have covered another comic book set of podcasts, where I could have covered superhero films, which I love as well, but there's tons of those as well. But it wasn't until I suddenly started asking myself, what was the kind of movies that I really get passionate about? And it just happens to be Christmas films, holiday films of most kinds. And that's when I suddenly realized that there really wasn't even that many people that really did their whole job of just analyzing and going into the whole, like, behind the scenes makings of Christmas films. So me being already a fan of other big movie based podcasts, like You Must Remember This, which is another really good one that also does deep dives, but they tend to focus on actors and not the movies themselves. So I decided to separate myself by really focusing on specific movies in that matter. And when it came time to actually started doing my show, I decided to go with The Santa Claus because I know that happens to be a very beloved Christmas movie for a lot of people. And then of course, once I started looking into that one, that also really got me to start looking around to realize that every great movie has a good story, just as long as it's told in the right context. And thus, once I really had my full setup on how I would do my two-parters with The Santa Claus, I decided that would essentially be my format for almost all my episodes, with the exception of my editorial episodes, which would focus on either like smaller Christmas TV specials or maybe Christmas movies that don't have as much of a story to tell, but are just still something I want to talk about.
I invite you, really, I encourage you to check out all of those podcasts. Now, if you've been listening to the Sounds of Christmas podcast for a while, you probably have noticed that I have kind of a love-hate relationship with the song Jingle Bell Rock. I love the song, the original version by Bobby Helms, as well as a lot of covers that have come out since then. However, Jingle Bell Rock also seems to be one of those songs that some artists will record in a seemingly half-hearted attempt at releasing a Christmas record.
There's no feeling there. There's no Christmas magic there. It's like, let's get this done and move on to whatever's next. That happens a lot. What I didn't know was that there was some controversy surrounding the song. I talked to singer, songwriter, consultant, blogger John O'Leary about some of what you may not know about Jingle Bell Rock.
I'm not really a conspiracy theorist in general, but there's some really intriguing aspects to the story. It's completely believable to me because I've heard about it from so many other artists who surrendered a copyright. They wrote a song and it got away from them and they got no credit. And I on my blog, that's a theme that I return to with the Dave Clark Five, Roberta Flack. Roberta Flack's producers getting credit for Killing Me Softly when the idea came from a Lori Lieberman or songwriter. There's a bunch of examples like that. But the best example and the most costly I can think of is the Jingle Bell Rock controversy, because it's just been a gazillion seller over the years, right?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
And in 1957, they recorded it. And this story briefly is that their producer or the A&R guy at Decca Records, Paul Cohen, told Bobby Helms, you got to record this song. It's a great song called Jingle Bell Hop. And Bobby came in off the road to do it. And he and the studio guitarist at the session, Hank Garland, they said, this song is crap. And they completely rearranged it. New lyrics, new melody, new structure to the song, new bridge. And the only thing remaining from the original song was the line Jingle Bell Hop, or the Jingle Hop. The Jingle Hop has begun. But what often happens with musical artists, especially in the 50s, but even now, so many musicians don't know about the business angle of performing, and especially songwriting and intellectual property. So it took a while for them to realize that their name, that they wrote, that Garland and Helms wrote the song, or substantially wrote the song, or wrote most of the song, but their name wasn't on the singles going out. And Bobby, I think they were a little bit late to the ball game and complaining about it, because it's harder to do it a couple of years later than to make a stink in the moment.
Right.
And Bobby, I don't know the personalities involved here, except that from what I've read, Hank Garland was somebody that you don't mess with. And finally, he got to be a very cranky feature on the Nashville scene because of what he alleged corruption in Nashville, and I think probably more than just about this record. And so that put him in, I think that put him in the crosshairs. And he was driving along 4 years later along the highway, and he was shot at. And he said they shot the tires, and he had a near fatal car accident. He was in a coma. And he said that there were bullet holes in the windshield, and he never regained. He lived for until 2004, I think, but he never regained his flexibility with his fingers. He could play a little bit, but he never regained his studio greatness. And for those who don't know, Hank Garland was considered the top Nashville guitar picker. And he still is. It's funny, just now, like 10 minutes ago, I looked on a site for top Nashville guitar players. And Chet Helms was in the top five. James Burton, who did stuff with Elvis Presley, was in the top five. But number one was Hank Garland.
Wow.
And Hank did stuff with Elvis. He played on the Bye Bye Love and Wake Up Little Susie for the Everly Brothers. He's got an incredible, his resume. And he played on the other song that, to me, the two classics of that era for kind of rockabilly Christmas classics would be Jingle Bell Rock and Brenda Lee's
Rocking Around the Christmas Tree.
Right. And sometimes I get the songs mixed up because I perform with my goddaughter, and at Christmas time we do some of these songs, we rock them up. And we would keep getting the songs mixed up, and we realized that Hank plays in both of them. I mean, it's Hank's guitar player that makes them both great, I think. Plus, they both, Brenda Lee, at the age of, I think she was 13 or 14 at the time, she, you know, that's a great vocal on Rocking Around the Christmas Tree. I mean, it's a classic. but so is Bobby Helms. I mean, those are two great, great, distinctive, catchy vocal tracks, right?
Oh, yeah. I know Jingle Bell Rock has been covered hundreds of times by other artists. And the same is true for Rockin' Around the Christmas Tree. And I know when I first came across this story that suggested conspiracy and all this, the first thing you think of is, well, this is sour grapes from these guys because they didn't know what they were doing, or they're just complaining later. But when you look into it, and you can find pictures where they show you Hank Garland's car, and you can see bullet holes. And it's never exactly explained why he was given electroshock therapy constantly over and over again after this accident, right, which left him a shell of who he was. And you look at Bobby Helms, and Bobby Helms had a couple number one hits. He was riding high on the country charts with other songs, and he never had another one after this. There's no way to prove so many years later that he was blackballed, but it seems really odd that he would have so much success and then all of a sudden nothing after complaining about this record.
Yeah, and obviously an uber talented fellow, but he never got back to his glory days. And he did have, actually both of them did make money. I mean, Hank, I don't know how much money Hank saved, but in the couple of years before his car accident, he was the studio musician in Nashville. So he made money off his sessions, but that, you know, dried up after his accident. Bobby Helms still made money off of performances, and he made money off of Jingle Bell Rock as a performer of the song, but not as a songwriter.
Right.
And big money, you know, with radio play really is the songs. I mean, he lost just tens of millions of dollars.
I got further into the radio industry side of Christmas music with Ken Benson from P1 Media Group, who talked to me about how and why traditional radio tests Christmas songs and what that means.
P1 Media Group is a team of former major market radio programmers who took the leap to the research side of the business. And now we consult stations through research on strategy, on music, on marketing, on promotion, with the goal to maintain and increase their market share. Because as you know, in the commercial radio world, the higher number of listeners you have, the bigger the ratings you have, the more money you can get for your advertising. So that is what we do. We help stations hopefully optimize and maximize their success.
And part of that is testing songs. Can you sort of explain what it means to test a song?
Sure. This probably started, I understand, probably around 1980, where prior to that, radio in the U.S. did little to no research, and somebody had an epiphany one day that maybe we should ask listeners what songs they like to listen to and which ones they don't. And they started doing things called music tests, where you'd get a representative sample of listeners to a certain format and target, and you'd play them hundreds of clips of songs, just short clips, 8 to 10 seconds long, and ask people to tell us whether or not they were familiar with them, how much they either liked or disliked it. And sometimes people would ask, is it a song you still enjoy hearing, or maybe you're tired of hearing it? And then stations would use this data along with instinct to create their playlist and determine what they're going to play for their audience, with the goal, again, to maximize the audience, because at the end of the game, it's a commercial enterprise and you're looking to monetize that audience into revenue.
How does testing the songs differ from songs that are best-selling or today even most streamed? I mean, I know from your description of it, I get that difference, but as far as deciding what song to play, testing a song versus seeing songs that are selling or streaming on Spotify or YouTube, what's the difference there?
That's something we've added to our annual Christmas research just a couple years ago, really at the suggestion of our partner in this, which is MRC Data, which controls BDS Radio, which monitors the airplay of hundreds and hundreds of stations around the country, as well as Canada. And then all the streaming services as well. So they came to us and said, hey, listen, you know, we're seeing, or at least it appears, not just with Christmas music, that radio is not necessarily aligned with what sometimes the most streamed songs are. And they suggested that we also look at the most streamed songs and see if there was any difference, if radio was perhaps missing these songs that were big in streaming and not played on the radio. And that was really the genesis to take a few years ago.
When you test, do you do this remotely? Is this testing online? Is it in a central location?
So the way our Christmas research works is every year around late October, we go into the field. We devise a sample from the 50 largest radio markets in the United States. And we qualify these people that they're between the ages of 18 and 54 years old. They tell us they listen either frequently or sometimes to an all Christmas music station in their local markets during the holiday season. And then we play a Christmas montage and we ask them to rate their personal enjoyment of Christmas music on a local radio station. And they have to rate that 7, 8, 9, or 10 on a 1 to 10 scale. So what we're looking for is radio listeners and people that really enjoy Christmas music and also use a local Christmas music station during the holiday season when most stations, or at least a couple stations in most markets, go all Christmas.
Well, being part of those tests might be very interesting for some, especially those listening to this podcast. Not everyone is a fan of Christmas music. To that end, I talked to healthy living expert Dr. Fab Mancini about Christmas music haters.
Well, you know, it's interesting, Ken, because there's a company called Bluecore, and they share that there was over 50,000 songs with the word Christmas in it. And the challenge, especially during the holidays, is that a song is usually associated with an experience. So if all of a sudden you had a promotion, maybe you got engaged or married, maybe you had your first child, maybe you got your first job, and then you hear a Christmas song, then the association of emotions tend to be more positive. But let's take a different scenario that all of a sudden is the holidays and it's Christmas, but then you're in the hospital and your mother or your father is dying of some terminally ill illness. Or perhaps you're involved in an accident that ends up, you know, crippling you. Or perhaps you have a breakup during the holidays, which tend to happen a lot. And then that's associated with that pain and suffering. So what we learn, and as we study the different studies by different people out there, is that depending on what experiences you associate your song with, tends to be what gives you the emotion of whether you're in complete joy and bliss or whether you're miserable and frustrated.
Eric Steinberg, Executive Vice President of Development and Artist Relations at the Sweet Relief Musicians Fund, one of my favorite charities, came on to talk about what Sweet Relief does and how you can help.
We are a resource for the music industry. Typically, when someone is overwhelmed by medical bills, and we provide financial assistance as well as other resources, referrals and such. But that's the heart and soul of what we do. Changed it a little bit since COVID rolled around. We started a COVID-19 fund that kind of waives that medical bill requirement and the criteria to receive funds from that is simply that you are a member of our community. You make most of your money in the music industry. And you've been negatively affected by the pandemic, which I'm sure you can imagine is a lot of folks, and we've been very, very busy.
Yeah. I talked to a lot of musicians, a lot of singers, usually about Christmas music, but you can't help but talk about the state of things for the last couple of years. And most of them have been unable to do any live gigs at all. And this is somewhere that Sweet Relief can certainly help because they're all sort of scrambling and trying to figure out what to do. For singers and musicians, how can they get help?
You can apply on our website. There's a very simple, you know, we've always tried to keep the hoops to a minimum that you have to jump through. Normally, people who apply to Sweet Relief are, you know, they're in a bad way. They're recovering from some type of injury or illness. And we don't want to prevent them. We don't want to have any barriers between them and help. And so we try to keep it as frictionless as possible. If you're applying for COVID-19 help, right on our website, you can apply right there digitally. It's very easy, and that's intentional.
For the rest of us, how can we help Sweet Relief help the musicians?
Thank you for asking. spreading the word about what we do, and on both ends, that we're here to help and that we also need help. What we do is pay for things. So we're always, the best way to help us help others is to provide us with financial support. So people who are willing to and able to make a donation at this time, that's great. If you're not kind of following us around on social media and engaging with our posts and kind of helping us get traction that way is great. When the holidays such as Christmas roll around, you could shop on our store. We've got lots of cool merch for sale, and all the proceeds go back into the fund to help others.
On another episode, Scott from the Holly Jolly Xmasu podcast and Tim from the Can't Wait for Christmas podcast join me, along with Jerry D from the Totally Rad Christmas podcast, to talk about Christmas songs we thought should be considered new classics.
Hey, Ken. I'm the host of Holly Jolly Xmasu. It's a podcast all about Japanese Christmas music. I pick an album or a theme, and I go into not just the music, but the musicians, their history. I've been doing it for just over 2 years, and I've got some really great, I've covered some really great albums. I've got some really fantastic stuff coming up. So if you're in the mood for some Christmas music that you literally aren't going to hear anywhere else, go ahead and tune in.
Very cool. Thank you. Tim?
So I'm Tim from the Can't Wait for Christmas podcast. It's a show about Christmas, just about everything Christmas, just traditions, movies, music, food, movies. I already said that. TV show, whatever. Christmas history. Basically, if anything I can look into and do like a deep dive into, we do a top five list every week. We do a little bit of Christmas Now every week. Every week, I wish. It comes out once a month, the 25th of every month, which I learned when I started the podcast is called Rudolph Day. And we've been at it for 7 years this year, let's say. Who's going to disagree with me?
I will.
Not you, imaginary listener. Sounds like Kermit the Frog. You weren't even invited on the show.
Carrying that a step further, I was joined by Sarah from Christmas Spirit News on Twitter and Kristen from the Holidays After Dark podcast to talk about some artists that we would like to see record Christmas music.
I'm going to go with Lizzo. I just adore her. She's had an amazing year with a new album, an Emmy-winning TV series, an HBO documentary, a People's Choice Award, a clothing line, and she released a Christmas song, a cover of Stevie Wonder. And so I was hoping that last one would be a teaser for a new Lizzo Christmas album.
She's on my list too. who's at the top of your list, Kristen?
So the top of my list is actually Lady Gaga, just because I think she can put such like a unique, fun element to Christmas music. And I think at the heart of it, she is like one of the best vocalists of our times, just talent wise. And so I would just love to see what her album would look like for that.
I was really surprised when it was announced that she was doing that first, I don't remember if it was an album or if it was just one song at first with Tony Bennett. I didn't know much about her other than, you know, what had already been on the pop charts. So it didn't seem to fit in my head. But wow, when it came out, that was great. They did Winter Wonderland together, which is nice, but that's it. That would be terrific.
For sure. I think her jazz stuff really makes her voice shine, and I think it really made a lot of people see that she's much more than just a pop artist.
Over the last few years, I've talked quite a bit about new Christmas music. I invited Michelle Stockard Miller to talk about her site, yuletidespirit.blogspot.com. Which was only fair since she's invited me to guest blog on her website every year for over a decade.
On one side, I have like all the different origins of the different things, like, you know, bells, the Yule log, Christmas Feast, Mistletoe, all that stuff. I have that on one side of the site. And then on the other side, I have stuff about, you know, movies and books and just different stuff like that. But that's my focus, really, you know, kind of make a more secular site, I guess I'm trying to say.
And I know that you like to do something special on Rudolph Day, which is the 25th of the month. And when you had first approached me about guest blogging on the site for Rudolph Day, I had not heard of Rudolph Day. I didn't know what it was. Can you sort of explain? I don't know if there is an official explanation, but what is Rudolph Day?
Well, you know, I actually had heard the term on MyMerryChristmas.com, which you are very familiar with. Mm-hmm. So that's where I heard of it. And basically, it's just what I learned was what it came out of, I think, was like people that really all year long plan for Christmas. So they're like doing their crafts and they're so they would pick like that date every month to do their stuff. And they called it Rudolph Day. So it's the 25th of every month. So I just thought, well, you know, I'm just going to expand that into my posts. And I used to do it almost every month. Now I've kind of gotten a little less with it, but when I do post on the non-Christmas time during, you know, not during the season, that's usually when I'll post is on the 20th.
I'm not exactly sure when it was you started asking me to do a guest blog for the October Rudolph Day. Do you remember how long we've been doing this?
I think it was not too long after I started in 2009, but I don't know if it was then. It might have been a couple years after that. It's been a long time that we've been doing it.
I've talked to JJ from Christmas Music News, which you'll find at New Xmas Music on Twitter, more than once about new Christmas music.
Christmas music freak, I'll start with that.
Okay.
And then every year I found myself just compiling a list for my own records, I guess, of everybody who released one that year. This is before I knew about you, before I knew about Sounds of Christmas. And so I searched for somebody on Twitter that was doing a list on Twitter itself. Couldn't find one. I'm like, I'm going to throw my list up, see what happens. After that, I found your very handy links by year, new releases by year with the graphics, with the cover art. It's a really sharp looking feature that you've got on your website too.
Thank you. Thank you. I try to do that every year. Because I know, you know, you mentioned that you're a Christmas music freak and you're certainly among friends here. And I know that I always like to find out what's coming. I'm a big fan of all kinds of Christmas music. So I always wanted to find out what's coming. And I built the Sounds of Christmas station for people like me who love all kinds of Christmas music. So I figured having a page with as many new releases as I could find every year would be something I know that I would like. And I just figured that there are probably other people out there that would like it too. I don't usually put singles on there because it's just hard. And there's so many.
You talk about niches. I think it's fine. You know, you do what you do. You do it very well. I do keep a list on Twitter itself by year. And then you've got sites like Christmas Spirit News they tweet out their Spotify playlists that do include the singles. And I think we're all fine, you know, sitting in our own seats in the Christmas Twitterverse.
Yeah, exactly. I think it's great. And I always find stuff that you post that I hadn't heard about or hadn't seen confirmed. Or, I mean, especially at this time of year, it's April, and you send out a tweet of a news story most recently, and we'll get into this more in just a bit, about Sheryl Crow attached to an upcoming Christmas movie, and she's writing a song for it. And I think that's so cool that we already know in April that we're going to have that to look forward to.
Every little nugget that comes out in the spring of summer, I cling to. And then by the time that the release cycle starts, I'm like, I don't have time for that one. They don't have a big enough following. I'm not going to mess with that one. But anything this time of year, yeah, that gets pushed out.
When the season really gets rolling for the Sounds of Christmas, and I'll throw up a brand new page for the new releases for 2022, and I'll start filling that up with all the usual suspects, I guess, you know, all the things, sure. The big names, the big releases, and I'll keep that going for as long as I can, and put up the smaller releases too, especially those little nuggets that come out that we just love. I'll make sure that I get those in there too, but I'm with you. Once the calendar gets close to Thanksgiving and we're seeing so many releases pumped out, it's very difficult to keep up.
Yeah, it's a daily labor of love for sure between like September and December 1st.
And I talked to Jerry from pauseandplay.com about his site and his forecast for new Christmas music.
I like to think of it as a place to find out when albums are coming out. I mean, you could navigate too much on Amazon. It's like a rabbit hole. But I like to keep it all compartmentalized on Pause and Play so people can find it easily. That's why I separate them by release date. And I try to sprinkle in information about the albums, like who's the producer, what's the single, who are the guests. Things like that.
How did you come to start Pause and Play?
Well, I think it has to go back farther than when I started it. Actually, we just celebrated our 26th year on October 1st.
Happy birthday.
Well, thank you so much. I can't believe I'm still doing it. In 1997, there was no Google. Amazon was just a bookstore. I don't even think I had any iTunes. There was no iTunes that I know of. And I just feel like I'm one of the war horses still around. Pause and Play. It started out as just Pause Inc. because I used to work in Tokyo for Stars and Stripes newspaper, which is for the military. And I was a civilian employee, but I was a sports editor, news. I ended up in news. One day, the entertainment editor held up some passes to a culture club press conference and said, "Who wants to go to this?" And nobody raised their hand except me. And I said, "I want to go." And once I covered that press conference, I was hooked because I was probably the only foreign reporter there. And all the Japanese were really timid about asking questions. So I ended up interviewing Boy George practically by myself. And from there, I just got the bug. I spent the next 4 or 5 years in Tokyo interviewing some of the biggest artists that you could imagine at the time. And then when I moved back to the States, I'm from Ohio. I just wanted to continue the music. So the pause part of Pause and Play is a dedication to my cat at the time. His name was Joe. And anytime I would write a letter home, I would put my name and a paw print next to it for Joe. So I decided, well, I'll just call it Pause. But then eventually it became Pause and Play. And at first it was just big hit dedicated to my artist interviews. And then I started sprinkling in the release dates, and that's what really got people to come back. And so I thought, well, maybe I should just focus on that. And I've been doing it since 97.
And this was kind of on my own wish list. I got to talk about the 30th anniversary of the Muppet Christmas Carol with Anthony and Ryan from the Moving Right Along podcast from toughpigs.com.
First of all, it's one of those things that in the theater, it did okay.
I mean, it was moderately successful. Yeah.
It was a moderate hit. A relatively cheap movie to make, and it made money. You know, it wasn't Aladdin, it wasn't Terminator 2 or whatever, you know, around that time. But it did okay. But then I think it's one of those things that everybody's parents or grandparents bought them the VHS tape. And so all through the 90s, it was on the Disney Channel all the time.
In the 90s,
you know. And I think it's one of those things that like every kid around our age, we say around our age, I'm 37, Ryan is 41 right now. So we were kids in the 90s. Everybody watched it, you know, maybe not every year, but like you either had the tape or you knew somebody who had the tape. It was just one of those movies that like ended up on everybody's shelf somehow.
Yeah.
And then we all grew up, and that's what A Christmas Carol is for a lot of people in their 30s, you know?
We've been talking about this on the podcast, how smart it was that we can see in retrospect how smart it was for them to do an adaptation of A Christmas Carol as this movie at this time, because yeah, it really did become something that people watch every year. Kids grew up with it. Now those kids are adults. They've gone back to revisit it. They're showing it to their own kids. So yeah, right. Very savvy decision on their part.
Right. And I said people our age, but certainly it's people younger than us too.
Definitely.
It's people who were not born yet when the movie came out and grew up with it as a classic that had always been there.
Yeah.
And now are 30 or 25 or what have you.
And I'm sure if it wasn't a Disney product, I'm sure some channel, some streaming service would have it 24 hours a day like they do with A Christmas Story on Christmas Eve. But it's on Disney Plus. So I was trying to see if I had just remembered it wrong, that maybe it was a bigger thing and I just wasn't aware of it. So I looked it up. It was the 21st highest earning movie of 1992.
Right. Yeah. That sounds right.
There were two Christmas movies ahead of it, Home Alone 2 and Batman Returns, which is only a Christmas movie in that it takes place at Christmas
time. Right. It didn't come out at Christmas. Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
So it certainly, you know, it was the 21st highest grossing movie. It wasn't a flop, but it's just amazing how big it's gotten. And there wasn't like a Star Wars movie will come out and there's the merchandising, and it didn't seem like there was that either. I don't remember. Am I wrong?
We haven't really talked about this on the podcast yet this season. And now that you're saying that, I don't remember that there was very much at the time. I think there was some.
You know, it's funny because I feel like, and again, this is conjecture. This is anecdotal. But I feel like there's a lot more Muppet Treasure Island specific stuff.
Oh, there was a ton of Muppet Treasure Island merchandise. Yeah.
Three and a half years later, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm not sure why. Maybe it's because like this movie, even by 1996, like was becoming more beloved. So it was like, well, got to strike while the iron's hot. We're doing this one. We're going to, because I remember there was like Magic Inc. Muppet Treasure Island book, you know, and
yeah,
like there was McDonald's toys. We still have a Gonzo in like a little boat, like a water toy from a fast food. Happy Meal toy, yeah. And I don't think this movie had any of that kind of stuff.
No, I guess not.
And I don't know if it's because it was seasonal, and everyone wanted that Home Alone 2 license instead. You know, like Ken mentioned. Because Home Alone was one of the biggest box office hits of all time,
right? Yeah.
Up to that time. So Home Alone 2 is coming out. You're gonna get the Talk Boy going, you know.
Oh man, the Talk Boy.
It's a big deal.
Yep.
And I do love Home Alone. I don't love Home Alone 2, the movie, but I loved the experience of going to see Home Alone 2 in the theater at the time.
And every October, when the sounds of Christmas becomes the sounds of Halloween, this podcast also delves into some of the spooky stuff. When that first Halloween approached, the first one after this podcast was launched, I talked to Katie Darrell, host of the Top 10 Revealed on Access TV, about an upcoming Halloween event.
The Top 10 Revealed is the perfect show for anyone, A, who loves rock and roll, and B, loves to debate and like listen to lists, right? You know, haven't you always talked to a buddy and been like, oh, you know what the best guitar solo, or you know who the best drummer is, or you know what my favorite breakup song is? Well, this show is for you, because each week we break down a new list. So one week it might be the top 10 90s breakup songs, or top 10 80s movie soundtracks, or top 10 guitar heroes that we've lost. And then we count down, obviously, these 10 songs. You learn some cool water cooler facts about the songs. But then we have rock stars actually commenting on why the song deserves to be on the list and give it the credibility. So you'll hear from anyone from Dee Snider of Twisted Sister, Sebastian Bach of Skid Row, Paul Stanley of Kiss, you know, members of Boyz II Men, you know, Backstreet Boys, 98 Degrees, Carney Wilson of Wilson Phillips, Lita Ford, all these great stars and celebrities on the show commenting on the lists. And so I think the list you brought up is our series premiere this Sunday, October 31st. First on Access TV. It is the top 10 murder songs. And it's not that we're celebrating murder. Okay, wait, like, listen, I do love a good murder show here and there. But these are songs that happen to reference murder, whether you realized it or not. And we'll be counting down 10 of them and having these celebrity commentators kind of hold our hand through it. And I know you might be thinking to yourself, what's a good murder song? I Shot the Sheriff, Eric Clapton, Bob Marley, right? I Shot the Sheriff. That's murder, you guys. That's murder.
Yes, absolutely.
Although it may have been in self-defense. So then again, but we could go through those semantics later.
That's true. And then you could have an episode about the ones where they get some good legal representation because I didn't shoot the deputy.
So. Right, exactly.
So this Sunday, which is Halloween, there's a marathon of episodes leading up to the murder songs ones, and these are all spooky, not a genre, yeah, but spooky lists, songs about the devil, ghoulish rockin' songs, songs about the end of the world. It's terrific for anybody who loves music, whether whatever kind, because this runs the gamut on genres. I was watching an episode, I don't remember when, but I think it was the ghoulish songs, and it kicks off with Ghostbusters, and you see Sebastian Bach from Skid Row talking about it, and you see somebody else who, and it's not just the comments that they're giving about it, but you learn stuff behind the music kind of things about how he came up with the song. It's really cool.
That's what I love about it is like you do get these fun facts and these takeaways. So it's not just garbage people being like, I like this song, I hate this song. You also learn that, well, in 1987, it was the writer was sued because it turns off they ripped off this other song. And, you know, but it then went on to win a Grammy. And the singer, before becoming famous, worked at McDonald's. You know what I mean? So we get these fun facts. You get rock stars. And so you see them out of their element. You get these comedians. And then you also get awesome rock and roll. And you did mention a great point. It's not just classic rock, although it does lean classic rock. But I mean, there will be, you know, Beyonce on there. There will be a random Kanye West song. You know, the lists, you know, there's just things you can't get away from. I mean, we have one coming up this season. I think it's top 10 songs about the rain. So of course you're going to get Creedence Clearwater, you know, Have You Ever Seen the Rain? But then you have to get in No Rain by Blind Melon, which is a 90s tune. So we definitely, you know, the gamut is filled.
And for a particularly scary episode for Halloween, I talked to Lasa from the It's a 90s Christmas podcast and Sean from the Christmas podcast about the Star Wars holiday special.
I first came across this thing through a certain internet reviewer who shall remain unnamed. I remember being absolutely shocked watching those clips. And then I saw it all the way through about 2 years or so ago for a commentary special I did for the Telestammtisch podcast alongside a few fellow critics. So it still was pretty fresh on my mind, but I still like rewatched it kind of like fast forwarding through it in preparation for this. And I mean, what can one say about this, honestly? Like, it comes across as a flat out scam. It looks like a horrible parody version of a Muppet Show. And ironically, Mark Hamill, C-3PO, and R2-D2 were on the Muppet Show.
That is true.
Muppet Show was better.
Yeah, yeah. Yes. I mean, George Lucas said it best. Like, it's on the back of every possible copy floating around. And George Lucas said, if I had the time and a sledgehammer, I would track down every single bootleg copy of that program and smash it.
Sean, overall thoughts on this?
Well, when I saw it when I was five, I mean, I've had fleeting memories ever since. I'm a huge Star Wars fan. So being five, it hit me right where they wanted it to, because they wanted to keep Star Wars fresh while they were making Empire. and they wanted to keep like the toy lines and everything going and keep it going since it was such a big hit. Now, granted, this, even as a 5-year-old who is obsessed with Star Wars, I could tell this wasn't as good, but being 5 and obsessed, I liked it then. Now it's more of a nostalgia thing for me versus if it's really good. It's just, it brings back all the memories of being a kid and being in love with Star Wars. I mean, I got all the Star Wars action figures and the Millennium Falcon, the X-Wing fighter, all that stuff when I was a kid, and none of it survived because I just played with it to death. If you're looking at it from a non-nostalgic place, yeah. If the creator of the whole, of this multi-billion dollar franchise, the Star Wars franchise, and he wants to kill it, yeah, it's not a good thing. But from a nostalgic standpoint, it brought back all those fun memories. So,
yeah, that's fair. I mean, like, Ken, you touched already on this. Let us remember, this was 1978. Like, Star Wars, the original film, had changed cinema forever, pretty much. But the world wasn't quite aware of it yet. Like, it was simply that big, successful movie everybody liked, you know? Yeah. So I personally think that certain producer people didn't quite know what to do with this property yet. And it seems to me that they put the special together rather quickly, dare I say, rushed.
Right, and Lucas didn't do a whole lot with this either, which you can tell. If Lucas would have had his grips on this a little more, it wouldn't have been near this way. But Lucas, from what I've researched, was in the midst of moving and getting Lucasfilm started and ILM and all that up and running. He was moving to a bigger place, so he didn't really have the time to get this thing going and doing what he needed. So,
yeah, I mean, the people behind the show, they claimed that they showed George Lucas dailies and he allegedly approved all of those dailies. And I think Red Letter Media did a great 2-part special about this special. And they said it best. They said, and I'm kind of like quoting here, they said, this is basically how that went. Like we went to him and showed him dailies, and he was just, while they were there, he was checking his bank account, and he was just like, yeah, it's fine.
Yeah, he wasn't paying attention to the dailies. He was just, yeah, okay, whatever. Just, he was more concentrated on getting up and running and probably getting geared up for making Empire.
I've also been fortunate enough to have had a lot of artists stop by this podcast, but this is long enough, so I'll get to that in the next episode. Thanks so much for listening, helping me share some Christmas spirit, and for continuing to support the Sounds of Christmas station and podcast. I told you how to listen to the station, and you're already listening to the podcast, so my work here is just about done. All of our episodes are available on the Sounds of Christmas website. Just click the podcast tab. And we also have a Linktree page, so you can click over, find us on your favorite streaming site, and then subscribe, and you'll never miss another episode. And I'll put that link down in the show notes. If you have comments or suggestions on this episode, previous episode, or the Sounds of Christmas station, feel free to reach out to me on social media or through the website. If you're listening to this episode on your phone, you can also click the Send Us a Text Message link and connect that way. Thanks again, and may you always believe in Santa Claus.